Can you imagine the crowd scurrying along beside Jesus on the way to Jairus' house to visit his daughter? What an important task, caring for a leader of the synagogue's beloved child. Can you see the woman purposely gliding through the crowd, being pushed and shoved like everyone else, knowing she was hiding something no one dare know? She's making every move count, since she's been anemic for over 12 years and doesn't have much energy. Notice her clasping her clothes close, hoping her pad is thick enough and she doesn't embarrass herself yet again by public leaking. Do you sense her careful attention to every move Jesus makes? Her desperate stretch as she reaches towards Jesus' cloak? This isn't a typical reaching for something just beyond the grasp. This is a yearning of her whole body to be healed and to become again a functioning member of her society. Usually this unnamed woman, pay attention, guys, wonder what it's like for those of us who identify as female to repeatedly be told that women in Bible times didn't get their names recorded. Usually this unnamed woman is called the hemorrhaging woman. That sets her apart from other women in the Gospels. Say the woman at the well, or the woman who washed Jesus' feet, or the woman who took care of the leftovers after the feeding of the 5,000, or even the one who took care of that boatload of fish left behind after those disciples ran after Jesus. Today, let's remember that she's much more than her illness, even if it has defined her life for 12 years, made it impossible for her to bear children, and sapped all of her earnings. This morning, joining with Robin Gallagher Branch, let's call her the woman in the crowd and add the courageous woman in the crowd. Now relax. We're not going to spend a bunch of time this morning on purity laws. Theologians, both Jewish and Christian, disagree whether the village folk away from Jerusalem and the temple were held to these difficult laws. In fact, go back and look at the Levitical and Numbers passages, and you'll see there are similar codes for men who have ejaculated. And wonder with me why you've never heard of these laws and whether or how they were enforced. Her physical ailments matter for the story. And regardless of the actual practice of purity laws, those of us who have bled monthly know how uncomfortable doing so for 12 years would have been, especially in the days before commercially available disposable feminine hygiene products. Rather than examining whether Jesus was making a statement about Jewish purity laws, let's take the feminist viewpoint, as Aries Weep suggests, and examine personal conversion and societal transformation. The question then becomes, who was changed in the story? How was the community around them transformed? Well, first, of course, the woman was healed. She had been seeking healing from doctors for over a decade, had lost all of her money, and had not gained her health. But note the difference in this healing story. If the woman hadn't acted, if she hadn't had the courage to join the crowd, the desperation to pursue Jesus, confidence that her actions would make a difference, and faith, that all-important faith in what she had heard about Jesus, her healing would not have taken place. This is quite different than most healing stories when Jesus purposely reaches out and says, I heal you. No, Jesus was a witness to this healing rather than the healer. Afterward, he chooses to stop and pay attention. Before anyone but this woman knows what has happened, Jesus is looking around, confused, stopping the frantic forward movement of the crowd, who's anxious to reach the deathly ill daughter of the important man. Jesus doesn't know what happened until the woman explains. What does Jesus witness when he turns to her? As he pays attention, does he recognize some kind of power in the woman? Has more than her illness been healed? Perhaps, as she told the whole truth, and Jesus listened with interest and compassion, she experienced other kinds of healing. Being listened to with rapt attention has healing powers. She now has hope of being a healthy member of her community. That's her transformation. But how was Jesus changed by this encounter with a woman who drained power from him without his permission? He doesn't get any help and understanding from his closest advisors, the disciples, who are once again clueless and mostly wrapped up in the status quo of getting inside the official's house. Can you hear them? I wonder if they're going to serve us snacks. Well, if Jesus saves Jairus' daughter, I'll bet Jairus kills the fatted calf for us. Rather, as Jesus listens to the woman, he's changed by the gift she gives him as she trusts him with the whole truth of her life. Shelley Rambo writes, "One might say that Jesus witnesses an encounter between the divine spirit and the human spirit. Divine power ignites the woman's spirit and infuses her body with life." He witnessed. But not only Jesus and the woman were changed when they realized they needed each other to create healthy community. The people around them who were paying attention that day, and the people the folks in the crowd told when they got home, and so on, were also changed. They saw the courage of the woman. They heard Jesus commend her faith. They sensed the power and the electricity that passed between them. They heard Jesus call her daughter, and their image of her changed. She who was icky is now beloved in the community. Ruby Sales, the civil rights activist, points out that the woman is calling into question the social ordering of relationships, including the use of religious law and sacred tradition to regulate those relationships. Ultimately, she is challenging the very nature of her community, who the community is with each other, and who the community is with God. That makes her, this unnamed woman, the hero of the story, because she has given Jesus a glimpse of what it is to create community through creating wholeness. Martin Luther King Jr., in his letter from Birmingham Jail, wrote, "In a real sense, all life is interrelated. All men are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. And you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. This is the interrelated structure of reality. This courageous woman in the crowd advocated for herself. But what happens when something big is between a woman and what she needs for healing? Something she can't get over, like a wall, or unfair trade practices, or subtle discrimination because of her gender, sexual preference, or race. If, as King wrote, all life is interrelated, if what affects my African-American sister weeping for her son killed by police bullets also affects me, how do we together find community? One way is to be part of advocating for change. I hope you're all planning to go to D.C. with me in April for Ecumenical Advocacy Days and take along someone younger than you so we can all learn how to be more effective advocates. I'm really serious. This is not it. Okay. Like, Regina's home congregation, Lee Heights, takes a bus. I'd like us to take a van and go to Ecumenical Advocacy Days, where you'll be encouraged. If you've been doing advocacy for a long time, you'll be encouraged by hundreds of people in a ballroom worshiping and learning with you. Or if you feel guilty for not doing enough advocacy, you'll be invigorated and come home with more energy by the dynamic speakers. So let's take a minute, put on your advocacy hats. It's there. You just got to get it out of your pocket. Let's assume we're all advocates and we're doing all we can to create a better community and a more just world, and we're working too hard at it. Okay, that might be a big leap, but let's do it, okay? We're working too hard at it. So this morning we're going to talk about ways to take care of ourselves as we're doing advocacy. Seven ways to keep ourselves healthy. And yes, I used to do this professionally, you know? And yes, I burned out. So these come from experience. Okay, I've talked to a lot of burned out advocates. One, limit your news exposure. Just because we have access to news 24/7 doesn't mean we benefit from it. Select one or two times a day to catch up on the news and live well the rest of the time. Two, choose. Choose just one or two issues to concentrate on. Become knowledgeable. Write letters, phone, read up, protest, but concentrate on only immigration or healthcare or civil rights. Be an expert in one thing rather than a dabbler in lots, and you'll feel more empowered. Meditate. Find yourself some time alone with God for weeping and rejoicing. Take your time seriously, your quiet time seriously, and daily. Do I do this? Not as much as I should. Witness what I said before, I have burned. Get out. Take a walk in the woods. Work in your garden. Well, shovel the sidewalk. Think about all the storms the trees have withstood. Note tiny insects and their determination. Breathe. Care for yourself. When you can't bear to hear any more bad news, it's okay to stop listening. When you've taken part in an action, driven somebody to their immigration hearing, and drained yourself in the process, rest. Someone else will do it for a while. That's called four-part harmony, right? Support workers. The people doing this stuff full-time need encouragement. Send a note, a batch of cookies, a bouquet, a donation so they get paid. Express your appreciation. They've been having a lot of hard days the last while. Support workers. I just did that one. We'll do it, not do it again. Name your joy. Every night before I go to sleep, I write down a list that Marna Matier taught me. Glad, G-L-A-D. G, what am I grateful for today? L, what did I learn? A, what did I accomplish? And D, what delighted me? This helps me to sink into sleep with good things on my mind. Some nights. Jesus didn't notice that the woman needed healing. No one in the crowd noticed that the woman needed healing. Even when Jesus stopped the group and looked around, no one picked her out. The oppression she suffered under was invisible to those near her. They weren't paying attention. People in crowds tend to track their attention the way the crowd is flowing toward whatever the next big, exciting, important thing is, not to the person next to them who's quietly hiding their deepest pain. King said, an individual has not started living until he can rise above the narrow confines of his individualistic concerns to the broader concerns of all humanity. In other words, friends, it takes going beyond ourselves and truly seeing those around us to create the beloved community. May we acknowledge our interrelatedness and through our attention become whole, one with another.